Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay with the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Good evening, Misty. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Bonnie, except for the bronchitis, so bear with me if I cough, but I'm doing well. How are you tonight?
I'm doing better than you because I don't have bronchitis, thankfully.
So thankfully, absolutely.
Misty's going to mute her phone in case she has to go into a coughing jag, but boy, Misty, I know that feeling only too well because I've been there and done it.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to welcome all of our listeners to our Straight Wives Talk Show. And once again, I would like to mention that you can get any of the information you hear on here, information about anything that I'm doing, our chat rooms, my newsletter, anything you need help with or support through my website, which I'm so excited has been updated and now launched. Misty, did you have a chance to look at it?
I did, and I need to do that.
Absolutely. So if you haven't gotten to look at my new website at www.gayhusbandswithas.com, please do look at it because I'm really excited about it. I like the new look. It's modern and it's really interactive. And most importantly, I have a new blog on there so that people can exchange ideas and stories. And so please feel free to use it. And that's how we keep learning about new things. And I'll be posting some of my new thoughts, my old articles, just to keep people aware of, you know, the whole situation with the straight gay marriages. So tonight we are very excited because we have a special guest with us. It's Patsy Ray Dawson, and Patsy's in Texas. Good evening, Patsy. How are you?
I'm doing absolutely fabulous, and I'm real excited about being here with you this evening.
And we really appreciate, more than you know, your being with us because of the fact that a lot of times I come to an impasse with women who come from a Christian upbringing and, you know, the whole issue of the faith and how, you know, Christianity affects marriages. You know, they just have such torn feelings about leaving a marriage because of their faith and their marriage vows. And so when Patsy showed me the work that she does, working, you know, as far as marriages for Christian women, I was really thrilled and asked her if she could, you know, join us tonight. And, you know, also in the future, to talk to women about this situation in a way that would be more understandable to women. I also want to give our call-in number, so in case any of you do have questions for Patsy as we're going through this, you know, feel free to call in. It's area code 646-716-4893. And I'll repeat it again, area code 646-716-4893. So, Patsy, can you tell us, first of all, before we even get into this whole issue, a little bit about your background and how long you've been working with, you know, marriages?
I've been teaching classes on marriage for 40 years now, and it's real interesting to me, Bonnie, as I kind of, one of the advantages of getting older is that you can look back and you can see things, draw conclusions that you could not see looking forward in your youth. And the number one marriage problem that I faced 40 years ago is still the number one marriage problem that I'm dealing with now. 40 years ago, I was dealing with it with women. Now I'm dealing with it with both men and women. The number one marriage problem 40 years ago was wives married to what I would call sexual duds, husbands who were not there for them sexually. And back then, nobody talked about homosexuality. Masturbation was not a word we used. And mm-hmm. I can look back and looking at your work and your checklist for straight wives, I can look back at some of those first women I worked with and thought, wow, I wish we had had a Bonnie back then because I think this problem has been around for a long time. The number one marriage problem I deal with now is still women married to sexual duds. But a lot of men are also expressing the same frustration with their wives, wives who are maybe doing their duty, but they are not there emotionally. So I deal with a lot of spouse abuse, but it is coupled usually with other sins in the marriage. So this is a problem that has been around for a long, long time.
Can I ask you a question, Patsy? I'm just curious.
Yes.
You know, you say you work with women who are in similar situations where they're not actively mentally involved sexually in their marriages. Do you think that some of that has to do with their upbringing as far as what they're taught about sex from the church?
Some of it is. I've done quite a bit of work on Victorian morals. And, you know, Victorian morals, they had even doctors saying that a healthy woman has no sexual feelings. And a lot of times after a woman gave birth, because of all the hormones that are surging through her body, she would experience an orgasm for the first time. They'd be
mm-hmm.
horrified at it, and the doctors would perform surgery on them because they thought that was some kind of a horrible, nasty reaction. So that's part of it, that we've come away from that. What I have seen is that a lot of women who grew up in rural areas on farms had a little bit healthier attitudes than maybe city-bred women, because they were around animals and they were having to think and draw some conclusions. So while we have people who turn to religion to reject that part of themselves, there were also healthy women throughout this period of time also.
But do you think that in general, I mean, the women, I've dealt with a lot of women who had very strong guilt issues over sex, you know, that they were taught growing up. Now, of course, I'm older, so I'm not speaking for younger women. You know, I'm going to be 60 next year, so, you know, I was born, grew up in the 70s, and, you know, 60s and 70s. And even, you know, through the 80s, a lot of women would tell me that, you know, according to their religious beliefs, that, you know, sex was there to procreate, not for enjoyment. Do you run across that thought at all?
Yes, and one of the things I was going to recommend for your listeners, if they will go on my website, they can pick up a booklet called Why God's People Make the Best Lovers, 8 Reasons God Gives for Sex. And procreation is actually the least important reason. Sex is extremely important to God.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, basically, the way I was going to approach this is, you know, one of the number one arguments people use against divorce is they say God hates divorce. And everybody's supposed to just fall on the floor and say, okay, you're right, he does. But more than God hates divorce, God loves sex. Sex originated in God's mind. He designed the way a man and a woman fit together. And in fact, in Proverbs 30, verses 18 through 19, he talks about how there's 3 things that are too wonderful for me, 4 things I don't understand, and the 4th thing is the way of a man with a maid. Sex is God's crowning act of the creation. It's something he's very proud of, and it's something that is very important for husbands and wives. In the Song of Solomon, he told the Shulamite, she's struggling with who to marry. Do I marry King Solomon, who just thinks I'm a fantastic body that he's got to have sex with? Or do I marry the shepherd who values me as a person? He wants to have sex with me, but he values my mind and me as a person. So she's struggling with who to marry. The whole Song of Solomon is about. It's about sex. Who do you marry? Do you marry for the physical, or do you marry for the physical plus the emotional?
Mm-hmm.
And in the story, at the turning point, God tells the Shulamite, says, you and the shepherd get married and get drunk on lovemaking. That's how important sex is to God. And then in the Old Testament, he told the young man, you get married and you don't go to war, you don't take a traveling job. You spend the first year of your life giving pleasure to the wife, to your wife. So you spend the first year just having absolutely fantastic, fabulous sex so that you lay that foundation. Then in Ecclesiastes 9:9, God tells the older man, one of your rewards for working hard in life, I've set you here on this planet and you're going to have to work hard to subdue it. But one of your rewards, one of your gifts from God, is to enjoy sex with the woman you love. And then in Proverbs 5, he talks about the golden years, that when a man is older, his wife's older, she's the wife of his youth, and here's all these fabulous young things running around. God says the best sex of all is older sex. So sex is extremely important to God. It's his crowning act of creation. He designed it. He wants us to enjoy it, not just for the release of hormones, but to bind our hearts and minds together so that as we age, we have a total union of our hearts and our minds. So God, love and sex is something that originated from God, and it is extremely important to him. And it is a shame that because of Victorian morals that we have kind of inherited a negative view.
So let me ask you, Patsy, because I think what you're saying is quite beautiful, and I, you know, really love hearing, you know, your version of how, you know, you came about this. Is this accepted theory within the church now?
I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you.
Is this what you would call an accepted theory within the church? The way you think?
I've done a lot of my own studying, so most of this is information I've dug out for myself. So.
And I think it's wonderful. I'm really excited about it.
And
I just need people to really believe it, you know, that what you're saying is that.
Well, and what I do, I base all of my teaching on the scriptures. So, you know, if they believe, and this is something I learned when I first started studying and teaching ladies' classes. I'd have somebody over, and we'd be, this is back before dishwashers, and we'd be washing the dishes together, and I was excited about what I was learning, and I'd be sharing, and they'd be arguing with me and saying, no, I don't think so, and disagreeing. And then we would sit down at the table, and we would get out our Bibles, and I would start showing them from the Bible. Here's what God says. And what I found was they'll argue with me, but they don't argue with God. If they believe God and the Bible and they can read it for themselves, then they're going to accept it. But if I'm just giving it as my opinion, which right now that's what I'm doing. I'm quoting a few scriptures, but we're not sitting down with our nose stuck in the Bible, seeing it for ourselves. It's easy to argue, but when we're looking at it and actually studying the scriptures, then, you know, if we believe in God, then it's easy to say, yes, he made us, he knows what makes us happy, and we're going to trust.
Well, I think that's really wonderful. I mean, you know, and I think that even though that they say that sex is the least amount of time of any part of a marriage, I still think it's one of the major important parts of a marriage. You know, maybe it doesn't take as much time as doing other things in life, but I think it's what seals a couple together in their intimacy and their love for each other and, you know, makes the relationship complete. And without that, I think that it's very difficult to maintain a quality relationship. Do you believe that too?
Absolutely. And if your readers will go on my website and get that booklet, it's the 8 reasons are listed right there with the verses. And all they have to do is over in the top right-hand corner, they'll see a bookshelf. They will click on that icon. It will give them the link where they can just download that booklet and print it out, study the scriptures for themselves to see how that really procreation is the least important reason in God's mind for a husband and wife to be engaging in sex.
And I would like to give everybody that website. So if you have your pencils or, of course, if you don't have one handy, you can always write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll send you Patsy's website. But you can write this down. It's patsyraydawson.com, and I'll spell it for you. PatsyRaeDawson.com, just like her name. And when you go to the website, as Patsy mentioned, you'll see on the very far right part of the website, it says bookshelf. I'm looking there now, Patsy.
Okay.
And Patsy has a bunch of, you know, free downloads here, including Why Christians Make the Best Lovers, 8 Reasons God Designed for Sex, Male and Female, God's Genius, Adultery and Sexual Addiction, A Plan for Healing the Soul and the Marriage. And also I see that you have here also your book, Marriage, A Taste of Heaven, correct? 3rd edition?
Yes, uh-huh.
Marriage, A Taste of Heaven, Volume 2. And the Song of Solomon, God's Sex Education. And another book, Marriage, A Taste of Heaven, Volume 1, Challenges in Marriage, What to Do When Sin Inhibits Love. So you've been really busy writing over the years, Patsy, I must say.
Well, it's been a journey that kind of my students have taken me on. They ask me questions I don't know the answer to, so I have to go do some more research. And so it's been quite a journey.
How about when you were growing up, you know, in your home, what kind of attitudes about sex were there? Was it a strongly Christian home that you grew up in?
Actually, I feel like I was really blessed the way I grew up. I grew up seeing my dad express love for my mom all the time. He was a very loving man. I grew up knowing that my grandmother enjoyed sex. I grew up knowing that my mother enjoyed sex. And they were both farm women. And
mm-hmm.
so I grew up knowing that sex was for women. And I think I was very blessed to have grown up in an environment where I openly saw my parents love each other and knew that they enjoyed this relationship. So I had that blessing. And
I think that is a blessing because, you know, I often think back to my grandmother, who I was very close with and who was very young at heart. She passed away 12 years ago, you know, at the age of 86. But she was really very modern and beautiful. I mean, you know, she could have modeled, you know, and she never had a healthy sex life. And, you know, she always felt bad about that. She always said, well, you know, when she got married back then, you know, back in the 1930s, the thought was, you know, you have sex because you're a woman and you have to do it at a man's convenience. I mean, she never really understood what it was to feel the passion and the intimacy, you know, from sex. She did it, you know, for having children or because her husband felt like, you know, doing it, not because, you know, there was any kind of great passion there. And she really missed out on that her whole life. And I think of how many women, even in this modern day and age, you know, they really feel deprived because they don't have men who can understand what their needs are. Which really gets to our next subject, you know, that I wanted to talk to you about, when women are involved with a gay husband, where, you know, that's not going to change. Is it okay
right.
to leave the marriage?
Well, you know, I said one of the things we wanted to need to talk about is people saying God hates divorce. And so they say that to us and thinking, well, we should just fall on the ground and say, okay, that solves everything. And this one I wanted to start off with talking about God loves sex, because when you understand that and then you put this comment that God hates divorce in that context, and you realize after that statement was made, what did God do? He turned around and he divorced Israel. God is a divorced man. And I'm using man, it sounds kind of weird to say divorced deity, so that may be what I should say, that God himself is divorced. And he said, I hate it, but he did it. And certainly we should hate it. It shouldn't be our first choice. It should be something we should abhor, that this is what life has come to. But when you have a marriage where one person has broken this relationship and refuses to make it right, then God has said he has provided for his people to not be trapped in unloving marriages. And that's what they are. They are marriages where the love is unnatural. In 1 Corinthians 7, where it's talking about, down in verses like 15, where it's talking about the husband is sanctified by the wife and the wife is sanctified by the husband, but if he's not content to stay, then let him depart, else your children are going to be unclean. One of the things as I have gotten older that I see more and more, and I hear older couples talk about it, is the damage that is done to children in unloving marriages. Because if a man does not know how to love his wife, he does not know how to love his children. I mean, that is just a fact of life. And usually what's going on, if a man is hiding why he does not love his wife, he's playing games with her, which is extremely mentally exhausting, and he does not have time to play those same kind of games with his kids. So they're being neglected. But most kids are very observant about what's going on in the marriage and the family, and they're not spinning the little tails. You know, as women, we have a real knack for making excuses and trying to pass stuff off and trying to smooth things over. We have a real knack for that. But kids don't. They just kind of see things like it is, and they're drawing conclusions about it. What I have seen in a lot of older couples, that maybe that marriage divorced, or maybe the man just died and mom is a widow now, but those kids are extremely angry towards that woman because she did not protect them from their father's inability to love them. She was a victim, too, of this lack of love, but those kids hold her responsible for that. And I have just seen that over and over and over again. That
Nancy, I'm really glad you're bringing that up, because one of the issues that I tell our women all the time, and, you know, of course, they don't always see it through my light, but, you know, having experienced enough, you know, information through my life, is that when they think they're protecting their children by staying in a bad marriage, they're not protecting them at all.
No.
Because these children grow up feeling insecure. They feel, you know, really divided between the parents. They feel responsible for keeping a bad marriage together, because inevitably, I'm sure you hear the same thing, where parents will say, well, we're staying together for the sake of the children.
Right.
And therefore, the children take on that blame and responsibility for their parents' unhappiness. And plus, as I always tell our women, I think maybe you'll agree with this, that you have to be a role model for your children, because whatever you do in your marriage is what they're going to repeat in their own marriage.
Right.
You know, that children learn, you know, from their parents on how to act in a relationship, for better or for worse. Would you agree with that?
It's really kind of ironic to me that they blame the loving parent. You know, it's like, you're the loving parent. Why didn't you protect me from that? So they're holding that parent responsible for keeping them in that unhealthy relationship. And I just see this over and over in older women. Their hearts are broken by the rejection of their children, and they don't understand that. But
well, I think what you brought up is so important, that the children feel they weren't protected.
Right.
On your website, you have a section, I would just like to go through this with you, where you have 10 questions to help your marriage to a new level. And you bring up a list of 10 different issues. Is it okay if we go through that?
Yes.
Okay, I'll read them out and you can talk a little bit about them. But the first one you mentioned is, does your marriage have emotional neglect in it, meaning each going his or her own way, not listening or sharing, too busy to spend time together? So that's an important issue, right?
Right.
As far as the emotional aspect.
And that's something that I think probably is a huge issue in marriages of homosexual distress.
Mm-hmm.
There's not that emotional bonding, and the kids feel that. Everybody, and this is what I'm starting to tell people, everybody in that family is love stars. And nobody, when you're love starved, you're not in a healthy relationship. A couple of years ago, Oprah had a couple on her program of where the woman made a commitment to her husband that she was going to be available for sex every single day. That was her gift to him for a year. And of course, that kind of put a burden on him, too, but he thought, okay, this is going to be fun. So she made that commitment. Every single day, I'm going to be there for you. At the end of the year, they slowed down on that, but they stopped and analyzed what happened to their marriage. What happened, they had been married for a while. They had kids. All of a sudden, the whole family is more touchy, more feely, more expressive of love. The whole family became more loving. And what happened was mom and dad were speaking a beautiful language of love in each other's arms, in the privacy of their bedroom, building their hearts and binding their hearts and minds together. And the whole family responded. So I'm just seeing whole families where everyone in that family is love starved, and it is a shame.
I think that's a really good point. And number two, you say, does your marriage getting into this have sexual neglect in it, where one person is climbing the wall because the other withholds sexual affection? So I think that's what you're bringing up.
Right, and that's what, you know, I've said that is the number one problem I've been dealing with for 40 years. And what I see, I hear so much anger from men who are married to women who give their body, but they withhold the emotional, the excitement part of it. And something that I think in your checklist, Bonnie, that is extremely important to talk about, where you say his sexual performance is more mechanical than passionate, with a lack of satisfying foreplay. And in your book, you know, one of the good things I think you do in your book is you describe the difference between sex with a homosexual and with a heterosexual man, and how that a heterosexual man, he's playful, he's experimentative, he's joyful. It's just a totally different relationship because he loves the woman. He's not doing his duty.
And he feels like he wants to be there instead of how can I get out of this?
Yes, yes.
Right? Which is the whole difference between being with a gay man and a straight man. You bring up a very good point next for number three. Does your marriage have verbal abuse in it? Like name-calling, cursing, ridiculing a person's looks or actions, yelling, judging motives, etc.? And I think that a lot of times our women say that the verbal and the emotional abuse is worse than even physical abuse.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
Yes. And what I've seen on a lot of women, there is a lot of physical abuse out there, but there are a lot of women, the first time their husband hits them or threatens to hit them, they let him know, hey, I'm not going to put up with that. And he will back off. I mean, not everyone will, but a lot of them will. But the verbal abuse continues. And I used to be real strong on saying it's real important how we talk to ourselves, whether we put ourselves down. But I'm now saying it is also equally important on how we allow others to talk to us. Because even if we're kind of passing it off and ignoring it, it is still chipping away at us, and it is affecting our self-image. Even if we have a very strong self-image and we think we're not letting it affect us, the way we allow other people to talk to us, it affects our sense of humor, it affects our outlook on life, and verbal and emotional abuse is extremely damaging to a marriage and to a whole family. And if a man is doing that to his wife, he's doing it to his kids too.
Right, and it's also setting a bad, you know, precedent for his children when they get older in relationships because, of you know, a girl grows up and she sees that her mother was willing to take this kind of abuse. Then she'll find herself in the same kind of relationship and she won't be able to fight back either.
Well,
so
and she's going to think that's normal. She may not even realize she's being
exactly
abused, but she thinks it's normal.
It's like Misty always says, when you dance in that circle of crazy, you know, that circle of crazy becomes your norm.
Right.
So you don't even know what normal is because you're living in a crazy, you know, situation.
Right.
But But also, I really agree with you, Patsy, that I know that in my own marriage that, you know, my self-esteem going into that marriage was good, and my husband was never physically abusive. But the emotional abuse, day in and day out, and the knocking me down and making me feel, you know, unworthy, that I started losing all confidence in myself, and I found myself within a few years like I was a dish rag. You know, I didn't even have any direction to stand up in. So I agree. Emotional abuse is really damaging. Also, you said, Dr. Number 4, does your marriage have physical abuse in it, like throwing things, pushing or shoving, slapping, pinching? That, you know, this is very detrimental also, correct?
Right, and once the marriage crosses a line into physical abuse, the danger level, it goes way up. And that's not something to take lightly. You know, there's lots of women that are murdered, and there's lots of women that, and I might say this, you know, we all have gut instincts, and a lot of times they're telling us something's wrong, but we argue with them. And what I tell women is, don't ever argue with your gut. It's telling you something that is wrong, and if you don't have enough life experiences to recognize what is wrong, then go to a women's shelter, go call somebody who's an expert and say, here's what my gut is telling me, and I don't know what to think about it. Help me sort it out, because it is very easy for us to judge what is happening right now on the basis of what happened, you know, 2 or 3 or 10 years ago. I felt safe with this man, and now all of a sudden my gut's telling me I'm in danger. Once this abuse crosses the physical line, everything is escalated. All the rules are changed. The danger level is very high.
I think Misty can address that, right, Misty? If Misty's able to join us.
Yes, I can.
Okay.
I completely agree with that. Once it escalates to, you know, usually I find with the women I work with and my own personal experience, you know, it starts out with the verbal abuse. And then just to get a more rise, or possibly, especially in a straight gay marriage, you know, the frustration builds up on part of that gay person, and, you know, the straight person's just wandering around in the dark just trying to make everything perfect, dancing inside the circle of crazy, while the gay person just keeps escalating. And, you know, you're exactly right. Once it reaches a certain threshold, then it just becomes more and more and more. And it's so true to trust your gut. I tell women that every day. You know,
you can talk a little bit how you lived through your own physical abuse in your marriage, which you always share with us.
Wow. It was really rough. It was, it became very abusive. And of course, I was not exposed to that type of abuse growing up, because I came from the other side. It was very abusive, and I wasn't able to recognize how abusive it was, because I didn't know what that was all about. I just thought, from my Christian background, and that this is where my Christianity hurt me, going, okay, marriage is forever. I took a vow. This is going to last forever. I'm going to make this work. Well, I almost made it work till it nearly killed me. And it's just so sad when I work with women that I see repeating some of my history and staying to try to make things work, when finally, you know, I came to a conclusion and realization, I don't have to put up with this. I don't have to put up with seeing a gun in my face. I don't have to put up with being talked so poorly to. And I don't have to put up with being in a car with someone. They don't know if they're going to drive us off of a cliff or if they're going to hit someone because they're so angry. And there's so much abuse that goes on, I think, in Christian marriages. And it wasn't just because my ex was gay. I mean, he had all kinds of issues on top of being gay. And certainly I'm not saying all gay husbands are abusive like mine was. I had quite the interesting case going on. But, you know, I looked at your website just a little bit, and I thought it was very interesting, some of the things you put on there, how that I think a lot of people hide behind Christianity in terms of they smooth it over and cover it over and don't address the fact that, yes, there are Christian homes where abuse takes place. Yes, there are Christian homes where one of the partners stay and they try to cover it up. I mean, all these things go on. And quite frankly, I think it gives Christianity a bad name sometimes, when in fact we just don't know how to deal with it sometimes. And sometimes when we seek out our ministers or where we go to church, we're given advice that sometimes we need to go to therapy for, with some of the advice we get. So, you know, it's just so great to have you on here. I keep finding myself shaking my head with things you're saying. I think it's so wonderful for the women that are getting to listen, because for myself, I'll briefly tell you, you know, I lived in this treacherous marriage for almost 10 years. And honestly, the night I was married, I asked myself, my gut intuition said, oh, my God, what did you do? I knew that night something was wrong. I didn't know what it was. And, of course, there was no violence before the marriage. The violence just escalated throughout the years. And finally, one night I had to decide, if I can't go on like this. Either he's going to kill me, or I'm just going to emotionally, spiritually, and physically die, wither up and die, or I have to get out. So where I made the break was, I had to hold true to my Christian values, but what I did was I sort of isolated myself. I was careful who I asked for advice from, because I sort of knew what they would tell me to do. Oh, you need to stay and work on it. I tried to work on it for 10 years, and it just wouldn't work. And what I did, I developed my own relationship with God. That was my key that pulled me away, was my own relationship. I would go into prayer, meditation, whatever it is you want to call it, and I would ask for certain things, almost like a sign, if you will. And I mean, it was just like things were handed to me into my lap, and I got all the information I needed. So I'd love to hear what you have to say for women that are in these marriages. You know, what could they do to help break away and hold true to their Christian values?
There is a book. If they're wanting to get into the word studies and the scriptures, there is a book that's been out for a couple of years that I highly recommend. I recommend it on my website. I've got a review on Amazon.com of it. It's called Not Under Bondage, and it's by Barbara Roberts. Mm-hmm. She deals with the scripture. She does the word studies about where the passage where it says God hates divorce. She was an abused woman herself. She talks about the relationship with the church on a lot of these things. And so if somebody wants to get into really the serious study so that their faith isn't based on my faith or your faith, but it's their faith with God, I highly recommend that book, Not Under Bondage by Barbara Roberts.
And okay, thank you.
It's not a big book, but it's one that will take them through that journey of the word studies and the scriptures, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Because, you know, as Bonnie knows, we get that all the time with these women that are just trying to make this work when it's broken beyond measure, when the relationship is so broken beyond measure. And oftentimes, like in the case of my ex-husband, he would use scripture and he would use Christianity against me as well. So, you know, when someone's a manipulator, they're not above manipulating the Bible either.
Right. And in fact, one of the shelters that I went through training at, their shelter for Christian women, they kept the location of it secret, because they said Christian men are some of the most violent men, because they think God gave them the right to abuse their women. And they said that all men, whether they claim to be Christian or not, will at some point appeal to God for their authority to mistreat their wives. And God just plainly says, you know, fellas, if you're mistreating your wife, I don't even hear your prayers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how much plainer can you get than that, to see what God thinks about men treating their wives this way?
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they use, you know, there's so many scriptures where many different churches and religions, and not just religions, I don't want to bash religion at all, but just so many different manipulative husbands, I'll put it this way, will see their wives as subservient and treat them that way. And, you know, you do as I say, or you're not living as a Christian. And it gives Christianity such a bad name, the people that do those sorts of things, when they take, you know, I feel you can take anything out of context.
Right.
And when you're married to someone that is using Christianity as their leg to stand on, they will certainly use all those scriptures and take it out of context and make the person feel even worse and feel like they're trapped. Well, you have to stay. This is what you have to put up with, and you have to do as I say.
And God does not trap women in marriages to abusive men. I think we trap ourselves a lot of times because of our ignorance, and I'm saying that in a kind way. We just don't have the knowledge to realize, and so we hear these things, and we say, hey, God's trapped me. I'm stuck. There's nothing I can do. But God does not trap us in these kind of marriages, and we owe it to ourselves to study and to learn and to sort out the truth so that we can live healthy ourselves and create a truly healthy environment for our children.
I think that's worth repeating again, don't you, Bonnie? I mean, really, what you just said, I mean,
yeah,
I think
could
we
you say
owe
it again?
To ourselves. Yeah, please say that again, because so many of the women I work with and Bonnie works with, they need to hear that again. What you just said.
Okay. Basically, what I'm saying is that we have a responsibility to ourselves to study and to determine the truth, because God does not trap us in abusive marriages. He gives us ways of escape, and divorce is one way of escape from an abusive marriage. It is a way of saying, hey, fella, your actions are not acceptable to God, and they are not acceptable to me, because God does not hear the prayers of a man who is abusive to his wife, who is mistreating her in any way. So we need, as women, we need to be doing our studying for ourselves to find the ways of escape that God has provided for us.
And Misty, I think that goes into the next point that Patsy has on her list. Does your marriage have sexual abuse in it? And she says, expecting the other to perform acts that make him or her uncomfortable emotionally or physically. And even though you don't say it, you know, as far as, you know, the straight gay situation, I think that may, you know, certainly come into this, you know, part of this, that, you know, we've had men who have asked women for all kinds of, you know, sexual acts that are not natural for the women. And I always tell women, you should never feel that you have to do something that isn't comfortable for you just to please a man, because you're not, you know, what he's looking for to start with. But would you agree on that?
Yes, and there's more to it than that. A lot of times men who are abusive, you know, anytime a man is abusive, and it's because he does not have the right emotional relationship with this woman, and so the act is not an act of love, it's an act of lust, it's an act of hormones, and a lot of times men who are very abusive, they want their wife to perform maybe with other men, maybe with women while they watch. Their turn-ons are perverted. It's not building the emotional relationship with that woman. And so that's an important thing. Is sex about promoting love and laying in each other's arms and speaking this beautiful language of love to each other? Or is it about one person's selfishness, me, 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 give me what I want?
And that leads into your next point. Does your marriage have sexual addiction in it, using visualization, porn, or phone sex along with self-gratification? They become so compulsive that it interferes with one's work and siphons off money, et cetera. And we do have women who come to our group who do have husbands who are sexual addicts.
When a person, and there are women that are sexual addicts too, it's not just men. We hear a lot about it with men. And basically a sexual addict, he's got the thing, and I teach that Solomon was a sexual addict. He was fascinated with bodies. He spent an average about 2.5 weeks on each woman, and that's including courtship, getting married, honeymoon, and he's off to the next woman trying to find that perfect body that would satisfy him. And in the Song of Solomon, he was up to wife number 140. He told the Shulamite, hey, lady, you've got this perfect body. You're going to end my search. as far as we know, she's the only one who saw through him because her mother taught her about sex and about how to please a man. But these men, they're not making the emotional bond with the woman, so they're not satisfied. And here's something too, Bonnie, is sexual addiction involves a lot of masturbation, and they're mm-hmm. masturbating to visual things, and masturbation has an effect on the brain, and whatever they are masturbating to is affecting their desire. When I first started studying this, after a lady came and sat down and said, hey, my husband's got this problem, I learned that one man masturbated to black panties, and he couldn't perform with his wife or any woman unless black panties were involved, because he had trained his mind to respond in that way. So you've got people that are involved in a way that is distorting sex for them, and there is no way a woman can satisfy a man and his fantasies. And in fact, when you talk about your straight women married mm-hmm. to homosexuals, I tell women all the time on different things, this is not your fault. And these men are doing everything they can to make her think it is her fault. And as women, it is very easy for us to blame ourselves. I think that's just part of the feminine nature. It's just very easy to say, hey, if I can fix it, I'm going to fix it. And there's just some things that aren't our fault. And it doesn't matter how hard we try, we can never fix it because it is not our fault. And this is one of those things that is not the woman's fault, and she cannot fix it.
Right, and not only are not her fault, but there's no way that she caused it. A lot of our women think, you know, their husbands tell them, well, you know, I had to go out and do this because you weren't giving me as much sex as I wanted. You know, so if I went with a man instead of a woman, it's not really cheating on you.
Right.
You know, they'll justify it however they have to, you know, feel better about themselves. And, you know, a lot of women start questioning themselves, and I try to reassure them it wouldn't matter if you have sex with them 10 times a day. It wouldn't change it. They don't
right.
want you. They want a man.
Right. Right.
And
yeah.
there's nothing
yeah.
you can do
I
to
mean,
change that.
What is her fault is she's got the wrong tummy. And,
exactly.
You know, femininity that God created is absolutely wonderful. You know, it's I love being a woman and all that's involved in that. And femininity is wonderful, and God made us that way. And when a man is unable to enjoy and appreciate femininity, that's not the woman's fault. That is within him, a problem within him.
Right. Then you go on to number 8. Does your marriage have parental dysfunction issues, pushing unsolicited advice, trying to manage the child's life, snubbing the child's mate, expecting the child to be on call, overwhelming elder care, incest, verbal or physical abuse? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Okay. I didn't quite hear what you said on the first part of that to bring me up to speed on it.
Okay. Does your marriage have parental dysfunction issues?
Okay. Well, we're all of us that are the baby boomers getting older and having older parents. A lot of times I like to make a distinction about, are we an adult child or are we an adult? And all of us grow up with, you know, when we grow up, there's things going on in our homes, and we are children looking at those things, making childish estimations of them and childish decisions, because we're a child. We just don't have much world experience, if we have any. And then when we grow up, marriage should force us to grow up, because we're living with someone else. We're having give and take. We're having to re-examine things. But a lot of times people don't grow up in marriage, and they carry those childish ways of dealing with problems into their marriage. And so what marriage is about growing up. We get married, we're an adult child, we need to grow up into an adult, look at our background, our upbringing, and say, yeah, Mom and Dad did the best they knew how to do, but they missed it in this area, and I'm going to do better. But you know what? Every one of us make our own mistakes. There's none of us that are perfect, and we're going to, they may be different mistakes than Mom and Dad made, but we're going to make our own mistakes, and our kids are going to have to grow up and be adults instead of adult children. So a lot of times as our parents are aging, it's real easy to slip back into that adult child mode with our parents without even thinking it about it, instead of being, hey, I'm an adult and this is my parent and I need to have an adult-adult relationship with my parent. That's my goal. And that's my goal with my daughter, is to have an adult-adult relationship with her.
Okay, number 9 on your list. You say, does your marriage have venting and seeking emotional rescue in it instead of problem-solving?
You're getting low on me again.
Okay, and it says, does your marriage have venting and seeking emotional rescue in it instead of problem-solving?
More
complaining and ranting while expecting to be catered to than working to actually overcome the problems.
And what that is where, you know, a lot of times couples have their cycles of fights and they get things off their chest, and you just have this cycle going on and on, and nothing ever really gets solved until somebody says, hey, we deal with this same problem every 3 months or every 6 months. I know one couple dealt with it every couple of years. It just kind of had a slow cycle. And so you have to stop and say, are we solving problems and growing, or are we just staying stuck on the same cycle all the time, where somebody rants and gets it off their chest, and then and usually when somebody rants, the other person is hurt and has a little harder time getting over it.
Okay, and the last thing on your list is, does your marriage have searches for solutions, new skills, and accountability in it, working to change thinking and behavior for lasting changes?
Well, and that's kind of what I've been talking about with, are you an adult or are you an adult child? Are you really trying to solve problems, or are you just trying to get along? And, you know, I think in a lot of these marriages that you talk about, straight married to the homosexuals, a lot of times they're trying to get along, like, well, if it doesn't get any worse than this, I can handle it. But what I see in being able to look back over 40 years is, and this, I don't care what the marriage problem is, if you're not dealing with it, it is going to get worse. I mean, that is just a fact of life. It is going to get worse. When I went through the training at the shelters, that they stress that about spouse abuse. Spouse abuse is always going to get worse. It's not ever going to get better unless it is really dealt with. And one thing I've learned with one lady, she was the third wife of a man, and she was real shocked that right after their honeymoon, he started in with his behavior towards her where he left off with wife number two. She didn't get to start fresh. He's already in this pattern. This is the way you treat women. And that's where he started with her, and her marriage deteriorated real quickly because he was on this path of getting worse. So that happens with spouse abuse. I told you that the number one problem I've been dealing with for 40 years is sexual duds. They may perform physically, but they're not there emotionally. And the other spouse, they're fighting their hormones, and they're saying, hey, I can't wait till my hormones slow down and I can live. I can survive. I can make it till then. But when they get to the then part, what they find is that they should have been building an emotional bond in each other's arms all these years. Now they are older. They don't have sex, and they don't have an emotional bond, and it is so lonely. It is so miserable. It is worse. Another problem I'm starting to see more frequently is financial abuse. There's a lot of these guys who are not emotionally involved with their wives, and there's usually either a sexual problem or a verbal or physical abuse problem going on. And the financial abuse, these men are such tight wads, it's the penny pinching is to make the wife miserable. It's not about the money.
It's about control.
Making
it's about
her miserable.
And it's about control a lot also, Patsy.
It's about control. And even
Patsy, by
that,
the way, we have a caller who's calling in, so let's see what they would like to ask you. Hold on a second. Hello, this is Bonnie. Who are we talking to?
Hi, Bonnie. This is Maggie.
Hi, Maggie. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing good. Patsy, this is Maggie, who's one of our support group members. And Maggie has really been wonderful. You know, she comes from a Christian background. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that, Maggie.
Well, I didn't come from quite as Christian a background as my ex-husband did. He was raised in the church. His father was a minister. And I remember his family always made me feel a little bit inferior because I had not been raised in quite as Christian a home as they had had. But about 2 years ago, I found out that my husband was gay. And, I mean, I had absolutely no clue. And when I started digging around, found out that he had been cheating on me with other men, having homosexual affairs, for about 4 years prior to that I knew of. So I was put into the dilemma of, oh, my God, what do I do now? I've been married for 35, 36 years. I haven't worked in 15 years. For me, marriage was for life. It was a lifestyle for me. And I was sitting here while I was listening to the show, and you were going through the checklist, and I pulled up an email that I wrote to a friend of mine shortly after I found out, where I actually said that I wrote, I believe divorce would reward him and punish me. He would be free to mess around with anything with a Y chromosome, and I would be left with little earning power and 8 years away from retirement age and a terrible economy. We have a comfortable lifestyle, and selfish as it sounds, I don't want to lose it because my husband is promiscuous and gay. That was my mindset at that point in time. I was listening to all of these points and looking at her checklist, and I was sitting there going, yeah, mechanical sex, verbal and emotional abuse, sexual addiction on my husband's part. I actually have a copy of an email where he told someone that he would imagine that I was a man when we had sex so that he would be able to perform. Our sex life had gone kaput years ago, and I thought he had erectile dysfunction. I mean, that seemed perfectly plausible to me. There wasn't anything else that, you know, I could pin it on. But I realize now that, if I had the right plumbing, he could perform just fine. The financial abuse that she just mentioned, he would complain about the money that I spent. But on the other hand, he was spending lots and lots of money, I later found out, at the local sex shop on all sorts of things. But then on the other hand, he would give me very expensive gifts at birthdays and Christmas and stuff, which I call guilt gifts. I'm sure just to keep me happy, because a happy wife is not a complaining wife.
So do you agree with all of Patsy's views about marriage? You know, and ending it if it's not the right marriage?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I soon came to realize that staying in this marriage or staying in the marriage that I was in was not a healthy thing to do. This was a man who had lied to me over the years, who had cheated on me, who had stolen from me, and that's not the kind of person that I wanted to stay married to. And it was a big, scary step for me to tell him that I had discovered what was going on and that I wanted a divorce. And I never felt guilty about asking for that divorce because I knew that even though, you know, I would have people throw that whole God hates divorce thing at me, I would always throw back, yeah, and God also says thou shalt not commit adultery. And adultery is biblical grounds for divorce. And
I think that's an interesting point, Patsy. Can you comment on that? When there's, you know, adultery in a marriage, whether it's man or woman, you know, is that grounds for divorce?
Absolutely it is. And, you know, Jesus talks about mental adultery, that he recognizes mental adultery as adultery. And it's real interesting to me in that same passage there in Matthew 5, right in the middle of talking about mental adultery, he talks about cutting off your hand if it offends thee and plucking out your eye. And for a lot of years, I thought, you know, what in the world is that doing right in the middle of this section? And then he goes on and talks about mental adultery again. And I learned when the lady first came to me and talking to me about her husband was involved in sexual addiction, about a week later, a fella called me, a friend called me, and he said, what are you studying? What are you working on? And I said, I'm studying about sexual addiction. And he said, I have that problem. And the very next day, he and his wife were at our house talking to us about that. And his wife brought up about how he was out teaching women how to become Christians, and he was hitting on them. And his wife blurted out saying, but I didn't know you were masturbating to him. And he said, he was real embarrassed, and he real quietly said, that's part of lust. And the light turned on for me right then to understand what was really, what mental adultery was all about. If a man is masturbating, thinking about another woman, he is committing an illicit sexual act on his body, and that man's wife knew that he was being unfaithful to her when he was masturbating, thinking about these women that he was trying to teach the gospel to. And that is what Jesus is talking about. If your hand offends you, if your masturbating hand offends you, cut it off. If your eyes full of adultery are making you commit mental adultery, then pluck it out. And of course, I'm not saying go out and mutilate yourself. That's not what I'm saying. Jesus is making a real strong point that a lot of times as women, we're naive and we don't get it until some man makes some comment like that. And Jesus recognizes that kind of adultery as grounds for divorce. And I want to suggest that if these men are not having sex with their wives, they're having sex with somebody, and the person they may be having sex with is themselves.
You see a lot of that, Patsy?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think women are real naive about that. And, you know, a lot of our sermons come from men, and I've never heard, well, I have heard one man preach it, but I've only heard one man preach it. And we're easy to fool. I mean, our plumbing's different. We work a little bit more subtly. And it's easy to fool us, but I think, you know, Jesus makes it very clear these are scriptural grounds for divorce. And I'm going to come back to where I started off with. God created sex. God loves sex. He gives us instructions. He wants us to be getting drunk on lovemaking in our marriages, so that we're binding our hearts together and we're creating loving homes for our kids. And when men are out here violating God's crowning act of the creation, he's offended. And he does not trap us in those kinds of marriages.
Maggie, let me ask you a question. In your marriage to a gay man, you know, you were married for a lot of years. Did you ever feel the way that, you know, Patsy's putting it with the sex that you had in your marriage? Was it passionate, intimate types of sex?
No, not really. I always thought there was something wrong with me because, you know, sex was never the fireworks and, you know, wonderful thing that I had always, you know, heard it was supposed to be. It was very mechanical. I don't mean to be crude or anything, but I mean, we would have sex. My husband would, you know, have his orgasm. In the entire time we were married, never achieved an orgasm through intercourse. And I thought that was my fault. And he would just sort of roll off of me and say, well, if you want to finish yourself off, that's fine with me.
So
it was,
Patsy,
you know.
I mean, that's not making love as far as you're concerned, right?
No, that's not making love. I don't think there was any love involved. It was just a physical act of sex. I was making notes here while Patsy was talking, and there was something I wanted to. There was no love in it.
So I feel really bad for so many women who may be married to men, you know, who they married for 20, 30, 40 years, who never really had a sexually satisfying relationship, you know, because I feel that's so important to a woman, you know, and that's one of her rights. I always talk about that, you know, this is what, such an important part of life and building intimacy and love in a relationship is having a good sexual relationship. And yet so many women go through their whole lives and never have that opportunity, and I feel that they've been robbed, for lack of using a better word, but they've been cheated and they've been robbed from that.
And something that you tend not to see things when you're in the middle. 20/20 hindsight is wonderful, I guess is what I'm trying to say. After my husband and I separated, he did come out to our sons. We have two grown sons, and he told our sons, you know, that he was gay. And one of my sons, my younger one, told me, he said, you know, you and Dad never hugged a lot. I never saw y'all, you know, hugging and kissing a lot. He said, but, you know, a lot of people don't do public displays of affection. And I just thought that's the way you guys were. And I never realized, you know, what my children were seeing. And another thing, Patsy had mentioned the damage to children, you know, when the marriage is an unloving marriage. And my older son found gay pornography hidden in the garage when he was 15 years old. And he is now 31 years old. So for over half of his life, he kept his father's secret. I shudder to think the damage that was done to him as a result of that.
And how do you feel about that, Patsy?
You know, that's a real interesting comment because a lot of kids, they love their mother and they know things that are going on, and they don't want to hurt her. They
exactly.
think if mom knew this, it would hurt her so bad. And that's another place where I would say if your gut is telling you something, if you think something's going on with your kids, you know, kids are just so reluctant to speak up, is to take your child aside and say, you know, give them the freedom to tell you things, so that they don't have to worry about hurting your feelings and that sort of thing, because that is an absolutely huge burden for that child to carry, to keep his dad's secret for whatever reason, you know, I don't want to hurt Mom, or I can't believe this about Dad, whatever.
Well,
so,
and I think also another reason, Patsy, that I get from children, you know, that I work with, is that they're so afraid that if they say anything, it's going to split up the marriage, and then they feel that responsibility also.
Yeah. And they may be right on that. Maybe that marriage needs to be split up. But here again, this is a child dealing with a very adult problem with child knowledge, so that they're not able to make that wise decision, you know, that Mom needs this information so she can make a decision that's best for the whole family. So,
Maggie, do you think that that happened with your son, that maybe he kept it quiet for that reason?
I think that's probably the reason. You know, he, you know, wanted to protect me. My sons and I have always had a very close relationship. We've always been able to talk about anything. And so I think that was probably the case, that, you know, that he didn't want to hurt me. I mean, that's a big thing to have to go to either parent with and say, you know, hey, I know what's going on. I know, you know, Dad's batting for the other team. I feel really bad for my son that he had to, you know, he had to do that. Now, both of my sons have been very supportive of me during the whole divorce process. All they know is that their father is gay. They don't know any of the other details. Not that I would ever tell them all of the sordid junk that I found out, but then I also ended up being under a gag order as a result of our divorce settlement. And my husband did that so that I wouldn't say anything to his family, because his family is very anti-homosexual. And if they knew he was gay, I mean, that I just don't even want to go into the problems that that would cause. But so, you know, my sons have been supportive, and they understand that, you know, a marriage between, you know, a gay man and a heterosexual woman is not really going to work that well. So they've been supportive, you know, of the divorce. And, you know, and I've never badmouthed their dad to them, even before the gag order. I never badmouthed their dad, and he's still their father. That doesn't change. But, I thought I was lucky because I didn't have small children, during a divorce, because I thought, you know, gee, we won't have custody issues and child support issues and visitation stuff. And now I'm realizing that you just have a different set of problems when you have adult children. You know, you worry about how this is going to affect their personal relationships. We do have visitation issues, you know, at Christmas time, you know, who are they going to visit when? My husband now has a live-in partner. And I know that's extremely awkward for my older son, who is married, to take his wife and child into that situation. So, it's just, it's been a mess, and it's something that we have to deal with every issue as we get to it. We're kind of winging it, you know. And so far, the relationship with the boys is good, and I just pray that it stays that way.
I'm just curious, Maggie, now that you've, you know, seen a little bit about, you know, Patsy's site, are you going to look into any of her publications that she's generously offers for free, her downloads, which I'll be downloading also, and also buying your book, Patsy, because I'd like to read that myself.
And I didn't hear about the free download part. I kind of got in a little bit late on the show. So.
Yeah, Patsy has some wonderful free downloads on her website, and I just want to announce her website again. And, Patsy, I'm going to write about you in our upcoming newsletter coming out in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
If that's okay with you, and
that's
just, you know, let people know, you know, how to, you know, get your publications, because I think they'll just be so amazed with you. And on her website, and I'm going to read it again, it's patsyraydawson.com, patsyraedawson.com. If you go on the cover page right there, you'll see on the right-hand side, a little further down, it says bookshelf, and when you click into the bookshelf, you'll be able to see all of the downloads that you can do. I think, Maggie, they might really help you. you know, as far as, you know, like I say, this is Patsy's offering to all, everyone, Why Christians Make the Best Lovers, Eight Reasons God Designed for Sex, Male and Female, God's Genius, and Adultery and Sexual Addiction, A Plan for Healing the Soul and the Marriage. So, you know, you might be interested in those free downloads.
Well, I'll definitely be looking into those, especially that last one, Adultery and Sexual Addiction, because my husband was and probably still is a sex addict. I mean, he wasn't having sex with me, but I mean, he was all over the place. He traveled a lot on business, and he would pick up total strangers off the internet and invite them to his hotel room.
Also, Maggie, you were clueless while all of this was happening, correct?
Oh, absolutely clueless. Did not have a clue. Not a clue. And as far as the way, you know, as I told you, you know, my there was no love, you know, the sex was very mechanical. And my therapist even went so far as to say that, to consider that as a form of sexual abuse on his part. You know, the fact that, you know, he was only concerned with, you know, with himself, and the fact that he would imagine that I was the man in order to be able to perform, you know, and never was concerned about, you know, how good the sex was for me. You know, she said, that's, you know, the way I look at it, that's a form of sexual abuse.
No, I agree with that. Do you agree with that, Patsy?
Absolutely. He was pretending to be something that he was not. He's playing games to keep you fooled and blaming you for his lack of being able to function as a man.
Yeah.
Patsy, do you come across a lot of women married to gay men?
You know, in looking back over the last 40 years, I remember and think of a lot of instances of where I suspect that was the situation. I wish you'd been around in the late 60s and early 70s with this. You know, one of the first women I dealt with who's married to a sexual dud, she was probably about in her mid-40s then, and I feel certain that's what her marriage was. And it's kind of ironic that this was her second marriage. And she talked to me about her first husband, about he was everything that we talk about a heterosexual man being. He was playful. He was experimentative. He was passionate. And he was all of these things. And I don't remember why she ended up divorcing him. But her second husband was exactly the opposite. She would have probably checked 90% of the things you have on your checklist.
Mm-hmm.
As applying to him. And she had a normal husband, but she did not have a clue. Back then, I mean, we didn't talk and think. This was such a foreign idea. It never even entered our minds to be what the problem was. And where I kind of started with working with these people was I did a lot of research on Victorian morals, and I do think Victorian morals play a role in it. And as we talked about earlier, they affect a lot of women. So that was valuable study that I still see the value of, but it was just easy to pass that off as part of the generation we've all come from and not see it as something much different. So I'm going to make your checklist. I'm going to let people on that get my newsletter and such know about your checklist, because I think they need to explore whether this is why they're married to a sexual dud. And what I would like to maybe suggest, Bonnie, to you, I ask you this ever so often, and you always tell me no. I say, do you have a checklist for husbands that might be married to lesbians? Because some of these men that talk to me about how frustrated they are with their wives and how angry, the way their wives talk about sex is very similar to the way homosexuals talk about it. And maybe with your readership, maybe you could could get your readership to help you put a list together of a checklist for lesbians?
Well, I think there's probably information out on that, you know, with other groups that work more with that. You know, I cut my losses a long time ago and, you know, I'm kind of specialized with the guys versus the women.
Right.
Only because I think that, you know, it's beyond me. And to be honest, I just can't seem to get a handle on it with the women. But I do know that, you know, like I say, there are many women who I think were brought up to feel very mutated towards sex. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're a lesbian. They just grew up, first of all, they say that one out of every four women has been sexually abused throughout her lifetime. I think that, you know, that takes its toll on the way she reacts towards sex. I think the fact that, you know, religion a lot of times makes women feel that there's something abnormal about them, that they want to have sex.
Right.
And their mothers tell them and grandmothers tell them that, you know, sex is something dirty, you know, because of upbringing, you know, that they're misinterpreting from the Bible, unlike the way you're interpreting it. And they just really feel sexually mutated because they don't believe that it's something that they're supposed to be enjoying. Or, you know, a lot of times they just married the wrong guy, like you say, who are sexual duds in bed. And so if it's not pleasant for a woman, she's not going to want to have sex.
Right.
You know, I've had men tell me that they're great lovers, and I've been with men who think they're great lovers, and they're not at all. They're like you say, and I call them also sexual duds. You know, they don't have technique, they don't know what they're doing, and they don't love you enough to care. You know, they're just looking to please themselves, not to please you. So I think it's, you know, on the women's part, there may be different reasons why they're not necessarily having sex with men. It may not always be a homosexual reason. But those are just some of my thoughts.
Okay, I think those are very valid, and I think a woman's sexual nature can be so passive is not so subtle that maybe she's not recognizing it's easy for her to suppress it. It's real interesting.
Now, I think also, Patsy, I may be wrong, but just from what I've seen, I don't feel as many. Now, certainly there are a large number of, you know, women who are lesbians who do get married or bisexual, whatever they want to call themselves, you know, politically correct on their own personal lives. But I feel that lesbians in general are more true to themselves than gay men. You know, they don't feel that needed pressure to have to run out and get married nearly as much as gay men feel it. And I think that it's, you know, gay men who feel the pressure so much more. You know, because I think it's just so less accepted. Where
yeah.
With women, you know, people don't seem to take it the same way as they do with gay men. And plus, you know, with gay men, they feel a lot of times that, you know, they do want the same things that straight men want. You know, they do want a family. They do want, a lot of them don't want to be gay. You know, they're very unable to accept it for many of them in the beginning.
Yeah.
So I think they're more, they marry more so than, you know, lesbians do. But I certainly do know lesbians who do get married and who were hoping that for the same thing, you know, that being married and loving a man would make them straight. You know, they don't realize that, you know, it's not going to be the solution to what their problem is. But I'll certainly look into it and see if I see any information on that that
okay.
would give people, like,
well,
a heads up.
That's a real interesting perspective on that, so I appreciate getting to hear that.
So, Maggie, as we're winding down our show, do you have any other questions or thoughts you have for Patsy?
Oh, wow, put me on the spot. Actually, no. I was just, I listened. I think I tuned in about, about just 15, 20 minutes into the show, and you know, I had her website pulled up here, and I was, you know, going through that checklist with you, and like I said, I was sitting there going, yep, you know, and like I said, 20/20 hindsight is wonderful, and I see now what a bad marriage I was in, but, you know, I can't live my life with a bunch of regrets. I just have to go from today forward and make the best of, you know, what's left of my life. And my husband had
he was raised in the church, but he had pulled us away from church about the time he started acting out on his gay urges. And I kind of figure, you know, there was a reason for that. It may have been guilt or conscience, if he even has one. But I have found my way back to church now, and have found a wonderful congregation that has, you know, I mean, they don't know all the reasons behind my divorce. They just know I'm divorced. But, you know, they've been very warm and accepting, and you know, I just, like I said, I have to keep focused on the future. And
Maggie,
you know,
when you have a chance, go back and listen to the beginning of this show, because you'll be amazed at the things that Patsy said in the beginning about all the different scriptural things about, you know, wonderful reasons that women are supposed to enjoy sex. And I find that extremely amazing. Patsy, which one of your books, you know, would you say addresses this the most, if people want to buy a book?
The volume 2, God's People Make the Best Lovers.
Okay. And also, is it okay if I mention that I saw your books on Amazon? They can be ordered there?
Yes, yes.
Okay, that's where I'm going to be ordering mine from tonight. And I said volume 2 would be the one that addresses the scripture the most.
Right, right. Actually, volume 1 is out of print right now. I'm trying to get it back in print. And actually, one way my teaching has changed in 40 years is I'm now recommending that people start with volume 2 first.
Mm-hmm.
God's People Make the Best Lovers, because if you're not hacking it in the sexual realm, the emotional's not going to be what it should be, and you're not going to make it.
Okay, so once again, you can find Patsy's books on Amazon.com. Is that the best way to order them, or?
You can order them there, or you can order them on that sidebar on my website, either place.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure on your website, but God's People Make the Best Lovers. Okay, because I was feeling a little left out about the Christians making the best lovers, being Jewish. I was hoping I was in that list. But now that it's more generalized that God's people,
yeah,
I think I can get in under that category, right? And as I'm sitting here talking to you, I'm ordering my book right now from Amazon.
Okay, Bonnie, all 8 of those reasons under Christians make the best lovers come from the Old Testament.
Oh, good. So I can get in on this one. My boyfriend will feel so much better now that I can tell him I'm part of the crowd. Not to be upset because I didn't make it on the Christian list. But Patsy, I appreciate so much your being here, and I'm really hoping, if you don't mind, in a couple of months coming back again.
I would love to do that, and I really appreciate you having me.
Oh, and Maggie, thank you so much for calling in. You always shed such wonderful insight. And unfortunately, Misty wanted me to say goodnight for everybody because her bronchitis was so bad, she had to mute herself with her cough. So we send our love to Misty and hope, Misty, that you're feeling better really soon. And ladies, you just made it such a wonderful evening. I really thank you both so much for calling in. And Patsy, let me just announce your website again. It's Patsy Ray Dawson, PatsyRaeDawson.com. And do yourselves a favor, regardless of what religion you're from, this has to do with women in general. Just look at the website, see all that Patsy has to offer you. And I know that I certainly feel so much more, I just feel so great after this show, Patsy. You really made me feel so much better.
Well,
so
thank you so much
for being our guest. And everybody, we'll be back next week. And thank you again, Patsy. Thank you, Maggie. And we'll talk to both of you again soon. Everybody, have a great night, and love to all of you. Good night.
Bye. Good night.